We want to keep in mind as we study these words, the overall context, that this is a one another passage, and we're told in verse 14 that the law is fulfilled in the statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So how we live affects others, and what we choose, how we choose to live, is going to affect others. We can either walk by the Spirit, verse 16, verse 18 talks about being led by the Spirit. Verse 25 says, if we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. So there's two choices here. We need to choose to walk by the Spirit. But there's also the deeds of the flesh. And a lot of people choose those. And verse 19 says, these are evident. We can look at things and see when they're deeds of the flesh. And there's a list of them here. And we've looked at the first three that deal with sexual immorality. And so this morning we're going to start with the sins pertaining to worship of God. And here again, we may wonder, why is this so important to us? We do not have an idol in our home. We do not take a piece of wood and cover it with gold and make an image that we bow down to. But are there people in this world who do that? Yes. Buddha. Even the Catholic Church, they have their idols, and they are very important to them. They have them in their homes. They have them in their cars. You can say, I don't know what's what. I hear about St. Christopher. I don't know what he's supposed to do, but I think that's one of the ones they put in the car. I've heard people say that. So, but there are idols today. And as we're going to talk about, it doesn't have to be a piece of stone or a piece of resin or plastic that has been molded. We can make, there's a lot of things, and we're going to have a little list here in a little bit of things that we can make idols in our own heart. What did anyone come up with for a definition for idolatry?
Object of devotion.
Okay.
Anything that takes God's place.
Okay.
Extreme admiration for someone or something.
Okay.
It's service to an idol, so as to worship as a god or show excessive love or devotion to.
Okay. Let's look at Romans chapter 1. This has been, and as we're going to see in our next question, idolatry has been something that has been a problem for a very long time. Bobby, can you read verse 21 through 25 of Romans chapter 1?
For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation, and in their foolish heart was dark. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of a corruptible man and of birds and horses and animals and dogs. Therefore God gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchange the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever.
Okay. This tells us that this is something that's in the heart. This, in the lust of their heart, God said, okay, he's just going to give them over. So idolatry is something that starts in our heart. And this is why it's so important that we understand what it is and why it's a problem, and that we need to be sure that our heart is guarded against these things. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Amanda, read verse 19 through 21, please.
21 through
21? Mm-hmm. 19 through 21.
What do I mean then, that a thing that stops the idol is anything, or that an idol is anything? No, but I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons, not to God. And I do not want you to become sharers of demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord or the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord or the table of the demons.
We cannot have both. We have to choose. Are we going to serve God? Is He going to be the most important thing in our life and the most, the thing that no matter what, He's going to come first? We can't have it both ways. We have to choose. Sometimes people would like to kind of walk the line. You know, I want certain things, and certain things are important to me, and the line gets blurred as to whether it's really what's coming first. Is it God that's coming first, or is it this thing that's in my heart that I want so badly? Any other definitions that anybody wanted to...
In Colossians 3, I wrote that down because, you know, we're talking about the deeds of the flesh. In Colossians 3, verse 5, it says, therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality and greed, passion, evil, pride, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. And then, you know, all down through there, it's talking about when you've been raised in Christ, verse 1, it sets your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. So, you know, it's devotion to the lust of the flesh, especially sexual gratification, you know, at what's in, you know, this passage talking about the members of your body to this. And so, you know, you set your mind on it, like you were talking about the heart. So, and if that is what you live for instead of your life being hidden with Christ. And so, you know, if we live for those things instead of being dead to those things.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. The next thing that we're going to turn to now is, how did God view idolatry in the Old Testament? This has been a problem. In the Romans passage, if we'd have read the verse right above, it's talking about since the creation of the world, God's attributes have been known, but people have not chose Him. The first two people He created had an idol in their heart. And what was that? They wanted to be like God. They weren't satisfied with what God had given them. They wanted to be like God. They wanted, when Satan told them, oh, you're missing out on something, instead of just trusting God and saying, how can I question a God who has created me and put me in the garden and comes in the garden and talks with me and I have a relationship with Him? How can I question and want to be like Him? Why can't I be satisfied with what I have? But that wasn't good enough. They wanted something more. And so in their hearts, they said, this isn't enough. God's not enough. I want to have what He has. So idolatry and not putting God first in our life has been a problem since creation. Let's look at Exodus chapter 20, verse 4 and 5. Gina, would you read that, please?
You should not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me.
Okay, and this is something that is repeated again in Exodus 34:13. He tells them He's a jealous God, and it's in the context of idolatry. Moses, when he talks to them in Deuteronomy, he repeats that again in chapter 4:24 and also chapter 5:9, and then again in chapter 6 and verse 15. We're not going to take time to read those because they basically say almost exactly the same thing. I do want to turn to Joshua chapter 24, verse 19. Actually, we're going to look at 15 through 19. Linda, if you will read that, please.
Joshua 24:15.
15 through 19.
And if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the God of the Amorites and whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And the people answered and said,
Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God is He who brought us and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and who did these great signs in our sight and deserved us through all the ways in which we went and among all the people through whose midst we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the people, even the Amorites who lived in the land. We also will serve the Lord, for He is our God. And Joshua said to the people, you will not be able to serve the Lord, for He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgression or your sin.
Read down through verse 24, please.
And if you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then He will turn and do you harm and consume you after He has done good to you. And the people said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. And Joshua said to the people, you are witnesses against yourselves. You have chosen for yourself the Lord to serve Him. And they said, we are witnesses. Now therefore put away the foreign gods that are in your midst and incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. And the people said to Joshua, we will serve the Lord our God, and we will obey His voice.
Joshua, he goes back and forth with these people. In fact, he at one point tells them, you're not going to be able to do this. He had no confidence in them, and with good cause. In verse 23, I always find it interesting, he tells them, put away the foreign gods which are in your midst. Right now, they've conquest, they've gone in, they've been brought out of Egypt, they saw all the plagues, they've been brought out of Egypt, they've come, they've sinned by their sin and having to do the wilderness wanderings, and they continue on no matter what, you know, they're just constant with their sins. Why? You wonder why. Why can't these people get it? Here's why. Their heart was not with God. They had brought idols with them from Egypt. From the time they left Egypt, they had continued to worship the foreign gods that they brought with them. And you would think, okay, they're going to get this. They're going to get it right. But they didn't. They just continued on with their idolatry. So we today, our idols are different. But we today, sometimes, this is what we do. We're carrying our idols along with us. We've got things in our heart that, if they're not above God, they're on an equal par or real close to being above because of the choices we make. And we see the blessings of God. We come and we hear about the blessings of God, Jesus dying for our sins, but our hearts are not wholly knit to God. And that's what we need to be very careful of in having this idolatry that we carry with us. What are we carrying? Maybe we don't have this physical little image that we're carrying around. And you think, how did Moses put up with this? You know Moses knew they had these idols, and yet evidently, God was hoping and trying to bring these people along and teach these people. But at this point, here after that, this is after the conquest of the land. All of the land has been taken and divided. And you would think, okay, they've got what God promised them. They don't need their gods anymore. But maybe in their hearts, they felt like, we can't give up this God because this really may be the God that's doing this, not the God of heaven. And sometimes, our biggest idol is ourself. We think, I'm doing this. God really didn't do this. I'm the one who's accomplishing this. We don't think about the blessings and the things, the doors that God opens of opportunity to us for physical things and the blessings that we are given. We think about, well, we've done this. Is there any other comments on how God viewed idolatry in the Old Testament?
Well, there in your reading in Deuteronomy, it talks about their corrupt action. In Deuteronomy 9:14 and verse 9, and also verse 19, this is where God wanted to destroy the nation because of their idolatrous ways. And Moses stands between God and Israel and begs God not to destroy them, but he says that I will show my wrath against them. I mean, he was ready to destroy.
I think there was either at least three times that God told Moses, get away from them, I'm going to destroy them. And God pleaded, Moses would plead with God, And does anybody remember why Moses pleaded with God? Was it because he loved the Israelites so much?
It's what the other nations would look down on.
Exactly. He did not want God's name to be, or for God to be viewed as could not do something. And it wasn't because, and would he, had he destroyed all of the Israelites, would he still have been able to fulfill his promise to Abraham? Moses came through Aaron. And so it would still have been through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob's lineage. These, it would have, he could have still said, I'm taking Moses and I'm going to bring my Christ through him. But Moses did not want that to happen. Moses was a man who didn't have an idol in his heart against God. He was concerned about God and what God, how God would be viewed by the other nations. What? Yes.
Also on Deuteronomy 4:16-19, I don't know what version I was reading, probably New American Standard, I guess, where it says, watch yourselves carefully and do not act corruptly. That's something we have to do every day, is watch ourselves carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Or here it says, take careful heed to yourself.
Okay.
That's
what,
New King James.
What verse?
Deuteronomy 4:15.
24:15?
No. Chapter 4.
Oh, chapter 4, verse 15. Okay. Okay. And that's a good, that's a very good warning or piece of advice for us to watch ourselves. Who are we usually busy watching?
Others. Our husbands.
We're always, yeah. We always know somebody else who needed that sermon. Man, they should have been here. Have I applied it to myself? When I read something, do I think of myself first and then others who I might could help that have a problem in a certain area? But do I sweep my own household first to be sure that I am applying what God wants me to apply?
You know, on Steve's lessons on the family, I've told him this before. As many times as he taught it, which at first I was younger, and I always looked at my husband. He needed that, you know. I didn't get a lot out of it until I started paying attention to how it applied to me.
Mm-hmm. And so many times, whether it be in the family or kindness issues or whatever, it's always easy to know, oh boy, I could help them if they, yeah, if they'd listen to me. And then sometimes when things come out of my mouth, I think, maybe I better learn kindness myself first, or gentleness.
And you know, there in chapter 4, if you do markings and everything, it's just so many times to watch yourself carefully, beware, watch yourself, stand further. In verse 9, it says, give heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently. You know, often in the New Testament, it talks about watching and everything. It's diligently. It's not just a haphazard, I need to be aware and I need to be diligently on watch for these things to creep in. Because, it's like drifting down, as Steve talks about. You don't know you're drifting until you're way down the river. It's a diligent thing. Unless you forget the things, you know, and then there's that word remember. And it comes back to we need to keep our hearts towards God. We need to keep His Word ever present in our hearts and minds and pray about it and everything. Remember.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, let's look at what happened to Israel because of their idolatry. Let's look first of all at Judges chapter 2. Doris, would you like to read or would you rather me skip you? Judges chapter 2, verse 11 through 14.
Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the
Baals.
Baals?
Baals. Well, I'm not sure what your version is.
And they forsake the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were around them, and bowed themselves down to them. Thus they provoked the Lord in anger. And verse
13 and 14 also.
Yeah. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherah. What?
Asherah.
The anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies and drowned them so that they could no longer stand before their enemies.
Okay, it's interesting if you would go back and read chapter 1. We're not going to take time to do that, but if you'll turn back to chapter 1, look in verse 19. Judah took possession of the hill country but did not drive out the inhabitants. Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites, verse 21. 27, Manasseh did not take possession. And just so on down, none of the tribes did what they were told to do. Why did God tell them to drive these people out of the land? That's right. He knew that they would start to serve their gods.
Yeah.
And so that's why he told them to drive them out. Does anybody remember the first time we're introduced to Baal? Back in Numbers chapter 22. And we're not going to take time, but this is when Balaam, you know, when Balak wanted Balaam to come and curse the people. And then in verse 41, chapter 2:41 says, then it came about in the morning that Balak told Balaam, and brought him out up to the high places of Baal, and he saw from there a portion of the people. Baal starts with the children of Israel way back there. And the way that they finally got to the people was through the women. When Balaam was killed, I went to look that up, but it said that it was because of the sin that he caused Israel to sin, and it was through the women. And so here again, don't have anything to do with the women, don't have anything to do with the people, don't have anything to do with their idols, but by the time we get to Judges, Baal is just an integral part of their lives. And as we will see throughout the Judges, we're not going to take time to read these either, but in Judges 2:11 through 14, then again in chapter 6, in verse 25, in the story of Gideon, and then in 10:6, again it talks about the Baal. So all through the book of Judges, the idol of Baal was a problem to them. But it started way back in Numbers when Balaam would not curse the people of Israel, because Balak wanted him to, and Balak was the god of those people. So once we get something started, it's really hard to break the cycle. Let's look at Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 11 through 13. This is kind of at the end. This is kind of at the beginning where idolatry was, and I just picked, it's all through here. But then when we get to Jeremiah, when it's the time for them to be destroyed and driven out of the land, let's look at chapter 16, verse 11 through 13. Susan, would you read that, please?
Then you are to say to them, it is because your forefathers have forsaken me, declares the Lord, and have followed other gods and served them and bowed down to them. But me they have forsaken and have not kept my law. You too have done evil, even more than your forefathers. For behold, you are each one walking according to the stubbornness of his own evil heart without listening to me. So I will hurl you out of this land into the land which you have not known, neither you nor your father. And there you may serve other gods day and night, for I shall grant you no favor.
Okay, so here again, he says, it's because of the gods. And where does he say it comes from?
Their
Your stubborn and evil heart. And we need to be careful. We need to examine ourselves, be sure we don't have a stubborn heart. Again, in Amos, and we're not going to take time to, well, let's do, turn over to Amos right quick, Amos chapter 5, because here again, this is at their being carried out. Amos chapter 5, beginning in verse 25. Betty, would you read 25 through 27?
Did you present me with sacrifices and grain offerings in the wilderness for 40 years, O house of Israel? You also carried your own pitches, your kings, and your images, the star of your gods, which you made for yourself. Therefore, I will make you go into exile beyond Damascus, for the law of his name, God, the God of Israel.
So here again, it goes all the way back. They never got over idolatry. Never. And the only thing that we see when they came back, when Judah was brought back, the southern kingdom was brought back to re-inhabit the land, we don't read about idolatry. Maybe they finally got it out of their system. But idolatry was a problem with them from the day they left Egypt. And then Peter even references this in Acts chapter 7. Verse 41 through 43, and of course, Exodus 32. They're barely out of Egypt, and they've already built their first idol themselves. And of course, you know, Aaron acts like, "Well, I just threw it in the fire and it popped out." So, what kind of denial is that? You know, but where can we be with the denial when we have this God that's in our heart? Okay, does idolatry always have to involve a physical object? Let's look at Matthew chapter 6, 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Is wealth something you hold in your hand? Well, I guess it is, but I mean the concept of it. Materialism is really what is being described here. That's something that is in the heart. Can you think of a case in point of someone who had something in his heart? Well, I don't know how good a question this is. In the Old Testament, they wanted something and it was such an idol to them, and they wanted it so badly. Ahab, he wanted that vineyard. It was a piece of land he could own, but he wanted it so bad. It was a god to him. He had to have that vineyard. It wasn't his, but he wanted it. So could we classify that an idol in his heart? Where are we when we want something so badly? We either want a new house, or maybe we want a second house, or we want a boat, or we want this spectacular vacation that we're willing to do whatever it takes. If I have to work two jobs, my husband has to work two jobs, we have to miss church on Sunday, we get there once in a while. What is that? It's something that we want that's more important than what God has told us to do. And this piece of land came so important to him that he willingly allowed Jezebel to kill Naboth. She had to use his steel. He knew what was going on. She just tells him, "You get up from there and quit your pouting." Basically, is the way I put it. You know, he'd gone to bed and kind of was just in bed. Turned his face to the wall. Sounds like a kid.
The way I look at it, it's not necessarily it wasn't the land; it was the pride.
Whatever it was, there was something. Yeah. It was in his heart that he had to have what he wanted, whatever it was, whatever was driving him, though, whether it was his pride or, you know, I'm the king, I should have power, whether it was proving he had the power. But even though he didn't have the gumption to get up and do what it might require, he allowed her to do it, and he put his stamp of approval on whatever it was she did. And so we need to be very careful. What are some things that can be idols today that maybe we don't like to think of as idols?
Beauty.
Okay, beauty.
So many times people spend so much time, are
to losing weight. We all want to, you know, look like this image that we have in ourselves in the mind of all that we see when we're younger, and we try to keep young. And so often we spend so much time, money, and effort seeking those fleeting things, you know, that maybe we once had or that we wish, you know, we could have. And so, you know, just a different appearance or a different look, you know, has become so important to so many people.
Okay.
You know, that I even have to be careful not to get caught up into that myself.
Well, I learned a long time ago, wrinkles are coming, and there's no money, there's no magic in a bottle. And then you see all the people who go and have the facelifts, and they look worse than if they just left the wrinkles alone. And so whatever happened to aging with dignity? And we need to learn to do that. It's not the outward appearance that's important to God. It's the inner beauty of a woman. Okay, what are some other things that you might think of?
I think that anything could be an idol in the nowadays. I think that we should idol only God. We even sometimes have children before Him. That could be also.
That's right. Okay.
Idolizing sometimes husbands, sometimes long hair. Anything that is before Him could be.
Okay, I agree. Anybody else? How about sports? You ever see parents who have their kids in sports, and that child cannot miss a game, it cannot miss a practice. You know, if it coincides with a worship service, I've seen parents leave the child there and they come to worship. What are you teaching your children? If you leave them, they miss worship. So when they get to be Christians, is it only at, you teach them more by what you do sometimes than what you tell them. How about family? You ever have family come in and say,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming for lunch and, you know, we don't get to see each other very often and I've got to cook Uncle Joe's favorite and, you know, Grandma Susie, she's just going to be crushed if I don't have this. And so God will understand that I don't go today. How about school? Do you see children, or I say children, you see young people start an education and they want to be something, whatever it is, whether it be a famous writer or a, you know, whatever. You can choose anything. You can, it can just be something simple like a teacher, but I've got to make the best grades, and so, you know, I've got this test coming up and I can't go to church today. I've got to study for this test.
But they didn't give up going to that
study. Oh, no. And also, parents, what do you teach your children? Do your homework before time for worship. If you don't, you'll stay up after. We're going to worship. We may leave as soon as it's over, but we're going to worship. Your schoolwork is not the idol. It's not the God. It's not the most important thing.
I was thinking of holidays or special events like Super Bowl.
Sure.
On Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could be like a lot of the other churches. We could just put it on the screen. And see, what does that say? What does that say about a church's priorities? Okay, we got to get the people here, so we'll have the Super Bowl on the screen. And so there are things like that. It's just one day a year. The Super Bowl is played one day a year. Or maybe it's the World Series, and the last game falls on Sunday, and we've got to see if our team wins or not. And so there are so many things. Self. Just whatever I want. There are times that people, you see people that it's all about me. If it's not what I want and what I need, whether it's family or God or whoever, they come on the second rung. And so, yes.
Along with just saying it's all about me and saying sports and some other activities, I was having a discussion with someone. And sometimes it's the parents fulfilling their dreams that they didn't get to have in their children.
Exactly. And one of the things, and I know nobody here is involved in this, but that just jumps out at you with that, is these little kids' beauty contests.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they treat those poor little girls.
Yeah.
And they didn't get to be beauty queen, And so, but their little girl is going to be a beauty queen, no matter what it costs, no matter what it takes. And so, there's so many things that we can look at. And as Edith Emma said, anything that we put above God, it can be our love for our husband. It can be our love for our parents. Not that we're to take care of our parents. And God understands that. I have missed services on Sunday before because my mother was sick in the hospital and had to have somebody stay with her. I went to one service or the other, but I missed one service or the other. Someone would come stay in my place. And Steve's dad, when he was ill and living with us, I missed a lot of Wednesday nights because Stephen and I couldn't take turns. In our household, that doesn't work. And so if he's teaching, if he wasn't teaching, it would, but he was always teaching. And so God understands those circumstances, but it's the, well, Grandpa's coming in, and so I want to be here when he gets here. Well, give Grandpa the key to get in or the code to get in, and he'll be there when you get home.
Or tell a neighbor.
Yeah.
Your next two or three.
Of course, hopefully Grandpa's going to get there in time to go to church with you. Yeah. That would be best. Your hope. But anyway, there are things that, and God understands that there are circumstances that arise, but is that our habit? Or is that a special circumstance for a justifiable reason that we do this?
And of course, in the context of the study, sexual gratification is an idol.
Yes, that is an idol with many people.
Sexual pleasure in our society is right up there on top. You
know? Well, we see that in pornography. And we see that, I think we see that in the way women dress. When women dress to where You can see the bottom of their cleavage, not just the top of their cleavage. You can see the bottom of their cleavage. And their clothes are so tight, they're like painted on. You can tell if they have on underwear or not. And that is, there's something they want. And it's not just, it's not comfort. There is no way, you know, when you see them in the commercials, I haven't seen them in a long time, but where they used to lay down, they'd fight to get the jeans buttoned because they'd gained some weight. What's the point? You can't breathe. That hurts. You know, it's not comfortable. And so it's to show off what they have. And so the sexual innuendos are there. Okay, what specifically can we do to avoid this sin in our lives? What did y'all...
I'll put more further than my calling.
Okay, very good. Anybody have anything else?
Okay, we put some of God's word in a bed.
Okay. We have to, go ahead, Linda.
I put prayer, you know, self-examination every day, you know, and like you were talking about God's word and being filled with the Spirit, that's what in our lesson mm-hmm. and what that involves. It's Bible study, you know, what you're going to do that. And, but prayer every day, you know, and asking God's help. It's an attitude adjustment if we are truly honest in approaching God from an attitude adjustment. You know, help me to work on this, or I, you know, help me to be good in this, or then, or bring glory to your name, and not think after this, you know, and help me make wise decisions.
Have to be honest in our examination. If we examine ourselves and just always excuse ourselves. If someone comes and talks to us in a loving manner, how should we accept that? What does it usually do when somebody comes and talks to me? Say my dress. Say someone comes to me and feels like that maybe my dress is, my clothing is lower than I realized, and when I bend over, I'm showing things that I have no clue that I'm showing. What is our tendency when that happens?
Yeah.
We kind of our back kind of we feel a hair raising on the back of our neck, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
If we can learn to accept loving criticism in the manner that it's intended, and also if we see someone in that position, lovingly talk to them, because sometimes, and just you say, well, that's the older women's job. Well, look around and see who older women is relative. And sometimes, do you know who it's better to come from? Your peers. When one of your peers, someone your age or very little older than you, will love you enough, or maybe two or three people mention it to you, don't talk to others, but you take it upon yourself to talk to that person, and hopefully others will. And if it's more than just one person, they won't think, well, that's just, she's an old fuddy-duddy, or she just likes to get in everybody's business. Be involved in helping others, but also accept that help when it comes the other way around, and realize that, yes, it is your business. You know, so many times people have the attitude, it's my body and I can do what I want to with it. You can. But are we glorifying God? And so take criticism when it comes. What about, like, my husband's gotten a new job offer. Should we sit down and really consider that before? What should be the first thing we think about when he gets a new job offer? That's right. Where am I going to be able to worship God and work in his kingdom? What's going to be good for my children spiritually? What's going to glorify God? Can I glorify God there? And you may be, it may be that it's a good opportunity for you to, maybe you're in a larger congregation, and then maybe the one you're moving to is only 40 or 50 or 60 people, a lot more opportunity to work, a lot more opportunity to teach, opportunity to do things to help you grow, to make you steady. Sheena?
I think travel also, if you leave on a Sunday or if you leave on a Saturday, or you're getting to an area where there's going to be a church on Sunday morning.
Exactly right.
And showing your children that that's important too.
That's exactly right. And even when we leave on Sunday afternoon, we already know where we're stopping along the way. And when we're traveling, we always try to find some place on Wednesday night. That doesn't always work. Sometimes you visited there, and it's, you know, if you sit down and just talk amongst yourselves and study and pray and read, you're going to get more out of it than, you know, if you're... It's hard for me to go somewhere when I know all I'm going to hear stories and get someone get up there, hasn't prepared, didn't even know they were supposed to teach class before they got there. And so, but another way to look at that, though, is, or what comes to my mind, is the encouragement you give others, even if you don't get as much out of it as you think. Sometimes when you're traveling, especially on Wednesday, it's impossible, depending on the area of the country you're in. It is, like in the Northeast, I mean... When we traveled up there, we had to leave on a Friday night and drive several hours Friday night, all day Saturday, and about 3 hours on Sunday morning to get to a church. The only one in Sydney, New York, when we left Illinois, going that direction. They're just not up there. And then we planned to stay there the whole day. When we get there, and they only have morning worship. So. But these are some good things. And so let's continue to add to our list about things we can do to avoid this sin in our lives, because it is a very serious thing, and we see the destruction that it brought to the children of Israel from the very beginning. Okay, I'm not sure we'd get through sorcery today. I'm sorry. I appreciate all the input. I can tell y'all have worked on these things, and I appreciate that. And we're going to try to not take so long. Some of the other words that we're going to be getting into and dealing with one another are going to be things that that there's not quite as much discussion on. Okay, Sandra, would you be able to close this, please?